Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hutton O'Clock. Noon on a Wednesday, so it is Hutton O'Clock. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike and with Hutton Withrow joins us now. Caroline Willie D. Mace, we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Hut, appreciate you for joining us. It's already been, it's only been 1 day of mandatory minicamp, and things are already getting spicy. Trevor Maddich went on Jared's show yesterday, and he said he was disgusted by Treylon Burks' effort. He said that after watching him in practice yesterday, he would have cut him based off of his effort. I don't know if you were at practice or not, Hutton, but what is your reaction to Trevor Maddich's evaluation of Treylon Burks at practice yesterday?
Well, full disclosure, and great to be with you guys, the schedule does not line up with the business of meeting for the sake of meeting, and what I do on Zooms with
fun?
New York. So, I can't do that.
Meetings that could be emails?
Sure. Meet for the sake of doing, which we do, but, you know, sometimes we meet. I would love to be out there and see this effort because I don't know what to make of it, given that have you guys heard a clamoring of everyone saying this?
No. That was my point. No, not that specifically. Are there questions about whether he has the dog in him? See, this is maybe is a good place.
We've
to start
always had that, Willie, right?
To me, it's something different to say he doesn't have that dog in him. To me, that's a trait that you're kind of born with. It's hard to teach that. I don't know that you can put a dog in somebody. You either have it or you don't.
But
I do think effort and practice every day, I think you can not have the dog in you and still be giving good effort. I don't think it's a reputation that he has with that daily, questioning the effort and practice.
I listen to what the coaches say, and they're actually – Callahan didn't mention his name in one of the very first interviews when he's rolling through wide receiver, his core group. And now he's starting to do that. They're getting more questions about that. I know that other coaches are saying that his effort has and his start has been great. I don't think they would go out of their way to praise that. And Mace, I believe you and I were talking a few weeks ago. Burks has been a big topic, and rightfully so. But I said, like, based on what they've added in free agency in the draft and what they haven't done, he's going to be playing special teams. I don't think that's a big surprise that he's working at gunner and working at other spots and will play special teams, given the fact he's fourth on the depth chart. If he moves up on the depth chart due to injury, which is the only way I foresee that happening, maybe we see him not play as many team reps. But that's how you have to be active on game days, one of the 48. Is you're playing special teams if you're the fourth or fifth receiver. I guess in this offense, there could be 6 or 7 active, given how much they want to throw the football, but they're going to treat the running backs as receivers too. So the fourth receiver is absolutely going to play teams. I need to see it for myself to see a guy dogging it. But if that's like the true description of what Maddich saw, and I have no reason not to believe him, if he's saying that from his own perspective, I mean, that's alarming given the fact that, I mean, he's been on notice and he's on a rookie contract at a position where there are players getting paid boatloads of money. Now's the time to turn it up, not down.
Yeah, I'm with you. Jonathan Hutton is with us.
Don't want to judge. I'm not saying I'm all in on the dogging. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I know the track record isn't great, showing up out of shape year one. And here we are already talking about this. But again, the coaches are saying the opposite. So I'll go with what they're saying publicly because they don't really – I don't think they've been BSing us on the public stance of some of these guys.
And that was the point that I made earlier is if you tell me Jeffrey Simmons is dogging it, like I'm either not going to believe you or I'm not going to care because I know
right.
that Jeffrey Simmons is a proven commodity. It's the fact that this is year three for Treylon Burks and we still don't know what he is.
Well, and right now we do, though. we know he's been surpassed, right? And we know who he was at Arkansas. I'll go back to that. Like I haven't seen the, I haven't seen examples of him doing the opposite of anything but playing hard whenever he was in the SEC. So I would stick to what the coaches want to use him and implement him in. And, you know, they're not letting him speak yet to the media, which is intriguing, but he's learning a lot of different positions right now. Maybe that's part of it. And I don't know what period that Trevor Maddich is talking about, unless he's talking about the entire practice, which is also alarming if that's what he's saying.
We'll talk with Jonathan Hutton, talking Tennessee Titans. Now, looking at this situation, Jonathan, what do you – because we're trying to figure out now, because it's Treylon's, he's on his last leg, and we all understand that. You know, he's had 2 years prior to this to figure it out. It hadn't worked out for whatever reason. But what do you think needs to happen? Like, if you want to attach a number to it, how does this season needs to go in order for him to be back next year? Because I think if it goes the way it did last year or the year before that, then they're not going to bring him back. I don't care if he was their first round pick. They're not bringing him back. They're going to move on. But what would be, you think, a sweet spot to say, okay, he's shown improvement. Let's at least, you know, give him that fifth year.
Mace, he needs to accept his role and then climb the staircase. Realize where he is on the depth chart and climb the staircase.
Hut, oh, stop for a second. You know what? I was just thinking that this morning, that he has to be able to accept his role that he's in, whatever role they give him, whether it be special teams or receiver or whatnot. He needs to accept the role, but then know that he has to move up within that role. He has an opportunity to move up. But go ahead.
Look at the – and his agent can help him in this area. Look at the reality of what the roster looks like next year based on wide receiver contracts currently. You know, you've got some one-year contracts. You've got Hopkins, who wants the extension, wants to see a two-year deal because he has no more guaranteed money on his contract. There's a lot of different factors right now that should motivate Treylon Burks on a rookie deal with an option to pick up a fifth year or get extended even. He should have a mindset of this is a contract year. I love players that are on contract years at any position. And he should be pissed off for greatness. That should be the motivation. And he's at a great position right now where the salaries are going higher and higher. And, you know, 2 years ago, this organization didn't want to pay A.J. Brown that type of money. You know, like there's plenty to reach out and grab. You can grab the brass ring if you're Treylon Burks. I just don't know where his head's at in terms of doing all of that. We haven't heard from him in that regard. But he doesn't have to embrace – he just needs to accept where he is. Doesn't have to agree with it, but he may need to come to terms with it some. And I think with this coaching staff, if you're fourth on the depth chart in a wide receiver position, you're still going to be integrated into the offense on a weekly basis. You're a part of it. He needs to be available. He needs to be consistent and catch the balls that are in his wheelhouse that he did so well with KJ Jefferson at Arkansas. And he's going to be just fine. But it starts with being available, and it starts with the attitude on the practice field. And again, just one practice observation. I wasn't there. I can't speak to it. But it doesn't sound like it's a glowing review by any means for a guy who is making headlines for working at Gunner on a field across the way during a special teams period when we're still waiting to see what he's going to do whenever they put the pads on.
Yeah, you're right about that, Hutt. You know, he needs to accept where he is, but that doesn't mean he needs to stay where he is. So once he figures that out.
Yeah, where he is, you're right. I mean, he's on a different roster or he's Dick Westbrook-Ikhine. And exactly. No disrespect to Dick Westbrook-Ikhine. He stuck around with multiple coaching staffs. But that's not what Treylon Burks was drafted to be. He's not supposed to be a role player. This was a guy that last year was number one on the depth chart before Hopkins got here. Like that's this. Now we see how the philosophy and the mindset of the organization has really changed within the coaching staff, because now it's about, we're going to throw the football with a quarterback that can really sling it. And if we rein in the quarterback a bit, the passes should be in that intermediate range. That should be in his right, in his wheelhouse to strike. That should be the mindset of agent to player and then player to the field. That's what I want to see from Treylon Burks. I want to see the guy that I expected and the perception that I had of him from the SEC.
Now, we had a discussion yesterday about certain positions, and I relayed to the team that, you know, there's one position, there were a few, but one in particular. It may not look as a position of concern, but to me it is. I think the cornerback position, not because of the three guys that they're going to have that they project to be their starters, Awuzie, McQuarrie, and Snead. Not that. It's if one of those guys go down.
Yeah.
Then what does this team do? They've spent a lot of money on their two edge corners. The depth may not be there. So if one of those guys go down, and we already know what L'Jarius Sneed's issues are, the knee. Hopefully he can hold up another year like he did in Kansas City, play all 17 games. But we know the nature of this business. Guys are going to get hurt. Guys are going to miss games. So are you as concerned as I am about the depth at that position?
I'm concerned with the NFL quality depth across the roster. But, yeah, I'm with you at corner. That's why I've said they need another offseason like they just had, another full offseason for me to really jump in and say, this is the team that's going back into contention, because injuries are going to happen. The war of attrition has, they have lost the battle and the war the last few years in the war of attrition with health on the roster. And look, I mean, you're right about the depth. I could say that about several other spots too. And it, with the philosophy change as well, there's a lot of different factors into that. But they have improved significantly in the secondary. Going into the season. If they stay healthy, they're fine. If they lose one player, they're still fine. But there was a situation towards the end of last year where they've got two or three backups and then a backup to a backup rolled in there. And, you know, we've got Trey Avery playing man on the outside. That's not a good sign for how the defense is going to fare in a crucial situation. If you're trying to lock down a defense, or as a defense trying to lock down the offense from going down the field and scoring last minute and giving up a big drive in the final 4 minutes of a game. Like that's the crucial part of the wins and losses of the league. And that, again, we just got done talking about the investment in wide receiver. They're going to, the league's throwing the football. And I like what they've done, but what I haven't liked is the last few years where you're seeing the problems with the depth of the roster. And ultimately, that can come back and play a factor. They need another full offseason to replenish what they don't have on that second and third tier. And the second and third tier right now, have there's no threat of any of those guys moving up, right? They need to replenish that through the draft and free agency with the idea that they can move up on the depth chart as guys – come in and come out based on contract situations. They don't have that right now. And that's where they're really going to be hurt.
So, Hutt, yesterday we had Seth Walder on from ESPN, from the analytics department, and he was talking about how they arrived at the Titans being 27th in their power rankings right now.
Okay.
So we talked about a lot of different things. One thing that I thought was noteworthy, I asked him about what he sees as the combination of Pollard and Spears replacing an aging Derrick Henry. Because he was one that for a long time was saying Derrick Henry the last couple years for the Titans was still good, but there was quite a drop-off in the, especially the analytics part, the expected yards per rush. I was curious what he would say about Pollard and Spears. He said the one thing that you have to make sure you know is that the defense will account differently when you don't have Henry. Obviously, Henry was not as productive, but also they were still stacking the box against him.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't really have a great outlook for Pollard. And one of the things that jumped out to us, he said, once you've had a bad injury, odds are you're not going to bounce back like you were before the injury, which was a little ominous to me. He did say 2 years ago, Pollard was an analytic darling, big time. Dropped off big time last year, but there was a pretty significant injury mixed in there. So, what's your thought, because we haven't talked about it much, Pollard and Spears replacing Henry's production?
Well, I think what they're doing, the production itself from last year quite frankly, just in the run game, I think early on they will run the football more than what we may expect. But I think the production is the combination of run and pass, Willie. And I think that also, while you may not account for one player with eight men in the box, you can now rotate in either player or use both players and not be predictable and down and distance what you're going to do with the play call. I think that's also that needs to be factored in, which I don't know how they factor that in with a number until you have some result on the field or some evidence of what they're doing. But point being, if you've got Pollard and you have Spears on the field, but you also have Hopkins who's going to catch everything his way, and you have the ability to throw it to Calvin Ridley or Boyd, or, I mean, even a Treylon Burks, maybe tight end. There are options within the offense now. As long as they distribute the football out of the backfield the way they intend to and the way Callahan has talked about doing, they can do everything with both backs. And they could not do that in years prior. Maybe they could have. They just did not do that in years prior, where first and second down were Derrick Henry downs. Third down was not, unless it was third and very short. I look to that more than I look at, okay, how do they replace one player's production? I think the production gets replaced in the pass game, out of the backfield, in the flats, and on those intermediate routes, crossers and wheel routes out of the backfield with the running backs. Pollard's good in that area too, but he caught 50 passes, I believe. We know Spears can do that. He's certainly capable of that. He was drafted to do that. They have a young version of Pollard, and I think Spears, based on what they said even last year with the same general manager, they view him as a three-down back. So if Pollard, for whatever reason, and he should, they've signed off on it, doesn't come back from the injury as well as what they may have predicted, Spears should be the guy. That's the long-term investment based on where they are on the roster and the position that he's playing. So I think we're seeing more of that San Francisco style to what we've always, praised with Shanahan or with, in some cases, McVay prior to with the Rams and their backfield, and what we saw out of Cincinnati even, where how they distribute the football out of the backfield in some cases. I like what they've done. They need to execute that. And instead of one player being the offense, I think these guys factor in maybe more than what we've discussed, but they factor in as part of the piece to the entire body of work, more so than the attention and the football and chain mover, so to speak. That's Henry was doing a lot. There's a lot right to put on a running back, which was the face of the offense. That's not the case anymore. And I think that ultimately allowed you to spread the football around a lot more than what you were doing.
I think that's a good segue to the next part of what Walter said that I think has us all taking note, because again, we have our eye test about Levis, but all that you just said, right, so much was centered around Henry and what you can get off of the defense cheating towards Henry.
Yes.
Now you have a very different way of going about it, and you've got a very young quarterback that you're asking to make that adjustment and maybe have more on his plate. Maybe they're going to throw it more than they have in the last several years since Henry has had them be one of the most run-oriented teams in the league, if not the most, in some of those years.
Sure.
So can he do that? Walter doesn't have an optimistic outlook from his numbers. And again, it's not his opinion. This is what the analytics people do.
Yeah.
He had Levis more in the Bryce Young category, a very low in their key metrics. And all of us kind of looked at each other and said, wow, that's a little harsh based on some of the flashpoints that we saw. We saw some... I thought Levis, to be fair, flashed way more in certain games than Young ever did. And, of course, Young was playing for a flat-out awful team. But I just didn't see much from Young last year. I saw enough from Levis that has me hopeful. The analytics department, at least at ESPN, does not agree.
And I think, I'd love to know what the analytics department said about Levis coming out of the draft when Mel Kiper
right.
had
he admitted that they went, whatever they had... the Texans 32nd in this same metric last year. And, of course, Stroud proved them all wrong. And he's first to say, these are just the numbers. This is not a science every time. We're not right every time.
But it's also the 30,000-foot view that maybe we don't discuss more of, But, I maybe this plays into what the numbers are telling him. Callahan came in and was glowing, right, about the one pass to Burks against the Falcons in his first start, right, where he drops it in the bucket against two defenders while there's a defender right in front of him bearing down on him. You got another defender coming from the side, and he lets it loose on a pass where there's no way he could have seen Traylon Burks and where the ball was going to go. He knew where the ball needed to be, but there's no way he could have seen that route develop, but he still let it fly. They want to reel in the let-it-rip aspect of Will Levis. And maybe there are some throws that he got away with that maybe analytically or the numbers say the percentage chance of that being caught, which Burks didn't catch the pass, or the percentage chance of that not being a turnover or a poor play for you are, you know, higher than what the result was on the field for that particular play for Levis. Maybe that's factoring in. Again, that's giving the numbers benefit of the doubt. I just think he has more weapons around him. And the big if is if J.C. Latham is the left tackle of this team, and there's no question about it, he should be much improved from that. Now, I like his attitude. I like his willingness to tweak some things with whatever, mechanically they want to work on with him. And I think the other thing is he's taking the receivers and part of the offense out to a retreat between now and training camp. I think that's another leadership step for him. I like what I've seen from Levis, despite whatever has held him back from being a first-round pick or being a top-10 pick or being the quarterback that everyone was raving about, and then all of a sudden they weren't, but Kuiper was still on board with, and it's almost, he's a backup quarterback. Now, I think that's far from it. And I think that also factors in the closer view that we had than maybe the attention that was paid to Levis over the course of a season since he made his first start. And I don't blame a lot of people for not watching a ton of Titans football last year. But that also factors into sometimes, you know, you take the numbers, but you also have to add the other ingredient of what's realistic, what were the expectations, who was playing in front of him, and who was he throwing the football to? And in many cases, those answers are not NFL satisfactory at all. And we still sit here and think that he's got a lot more in the tank than what maybe some of the other quarterbacks that have been through that door over at their practice facility have been able to produce.
Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow. Hut, appreciate you as always. We'll catch up with you next Wednesday.
Yeah, I look forward to this each week, guys. Have a great rest of the week.
Awesome. Thanks, Hut. You too. Jonathan Hutton, he is the absolute best. We'll continue this conversation. We have a ton of phones on Traylon Burks, so we are right to you coming up next. Again, Trevor Maddich on Jared Stillman's show yesterday saying he was disgusted by Traylon Burks' effort in practice yesterday. D-May saying that's irresponsible of Trevor Maddich to say that. So we'll write to you coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
I'll give you a comparison with Calvin Ridley. Wide receiver. He was running about a 3/4 speed route against the air where he lined up on the left side, came up about 15 yards, and then turned around and did a little comeback route. About 3/4 speed, no defender was there. He extended his strides as if he were selling to that imaginary defensive back that he was going to blow right past him on a vertical route before he got to the top of his route and came back down. You could see that mentally he was running that route full speed to the end of it, even though physically it was only 3/4 speed. And when Traylon Burks goes in there, he'll run the beginning of the route hard. And then here comes the ball, and he's practicing to fumble. He's practicing to get hit and just go down where he is. You can't tell me that when you get into a game, you catch the ball and you're going to turn it on, because you devolve to the level of your habits.
That was Trevor Maddich on with Stillman and Company yesterday. Again, Trevor Maddich saying he was disgusted by Traylon Burks' effort in practice yesterday.
No, it's talking to Nick.
I was just telling him, I was like, what the hell does D-ball mean? At the very end, he said D-ball.
Yeah,
can you play it again?
Yeah.
Just the ending?
Put it on. Because you devolve.
Devolve.
I thought it said evolve.
I
thought he said D-ball. I was like, what is D-ball?
I hope he's not getting D-balled after three bad years.
You revert back to your habits. Which that's a very sound teaching principle. I agree with that in
Sounds
general.
Like medieval torture if you're getting deballed.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a good thing.
You don't want to get deballed. This is not a vet clinic.
Somebody's head is on the chopping block. I don't want that. No way. We didn't live in an old time anymore.
Devolve, rather. But we've got a bunch of reaction on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So I want to get right to you. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. Now, Indy Ben came for D-Mace early, and he has responded. Indy Ben says, "You're not being delusional, Derek, but you can't say that he's not been a bust to at least some degree, considering he was a mid-first-round pick, and this is year three, and he hasn't shown much of anything. Heck, Alec Pierce on my own squad. Oh, Indy Ben, the Colts! Has been a bust to some degree, but he was a second-rounder."
Listen, you know, people are going to determine what their level of bust is. Everybody will. You know, and it's all predicated on where you were drafted. If you were drafted the first overall pick, and if you don't play up to the standards of that pick, then people are going to say you're a bust. You could have just been a okay NFL player, but people are going to, you know, characterize you as a bust because you were the number one pick in the NFL draft. So people, you know, however you classify a bust, it is what it is. To me, until they say he's done, like until they are done, and this will be the last year, they're going to give him one last shot at this. This will be his last shot. If he doesn't get it done here, then it's a bust for the Tennessee Titans. I have no problem with saying that whatsoever. But he still has an opportunity. It hasn't gone the way that nobody expected it to go. He's been on the field, but he's been off more than he's been on. And it just hasn't come together for him. Mind you, he's worked through two offenses, and he's worked through three quarterbacks. But that's life in the NFL. That's what you got to do. You got to find a way to make it all work. I've always said I can work with anybody. As long as there's a level of respect there, I can work with anybody. As long as we have one goal in mind and there's a level of respect there, then we can work together. I may not like you after we leave this building, but hell, we're all going in the same direction. We're trying to win. That's all I need. So, listen, Indy Ben, you're right. He has it. Now, I think we've all established that trailing.
Nobody's denying
exactly
that
he hasn't played up to the level of his draft. But he has one more year to figure this out, at least with the Titans. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't, we don't have to worry because we won't be talking about him no more. Why? Because he won't be on this team no more. Mm-hmm. So, but you're right, Indy Ben. Listen, you know, he hasn't produced, and no one can get around that.
Michael in Madison says, "I hope that's not what they meant when they said Traylon has that dog in him." Ricky W. texts it, or comments on the YouTube chat, rather, about Treylon Burks and says, "I wonder how Caroline would feel if she was just starting out and her boss only let her go on the air for 10 minutes a week. That's the treatment that Burks has gotten. And then when she finally did get her 10 minutes for the week, she stumbles over her words a little bit, so then she only gets 5 minutes next week." There are so many things flawed with that comparison. First and foremost, Treylon Burks is not just starting out. This is Treylon Burks' third year in the NFL. Is he a 15-year veteran? No, he's not. But this isn't like this is his first practice as a rookie. Like, Treylon Burks, this is his third year. And year three, you know, you need to be a part of this offense when you're a first-round pick and it's your third year. The second thing is, you know, like, it's not that Treylon Burks just hasn't been getting opportunities. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been on the field. And again, I'll reiterate, some of that's not his fault, but it's the fact. So it's not just that the coaching staff had, you know, he was on the field every single play and was open on every single play, and the coach said, "Hey, Will, don't throw him the ball because we don't want Treylon to succeed." That's not the case. He just hasn't been available. His fault or not, it's the truth.
I think there's also been a lot of that time. Like, he had two major things happen last year, that had to do with injury. The day, we all remember exactly, we were on the show on the air when everybody started tweeting, "Oh my God, Traylon's down," right? Because up until then, there was more positive stuff about Burks than there ever had been, right, throughout his whole rookie year. the whole talk of training camp is he looks really good. He is he's catching everything. He's dominating every practice. Mm-hmm. All of us in a grain of salt, but we were taking note. Mm-hmm. And then that play happened in Minnesota. He was not the same. We didn't know how long it was going to take. I think there was a lot of speculation that he came back earlier than he should have. You rushed it, which happens a lot. And then, of course, in Pittsburgh, he got knocked out of the game. So that's two major, major things that happened that had a lot to do with the numbers that we saw. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's all of the other questions that we have aside, right, of whether when we do see him on the field, what are we seeing? We're not seeing dominance. You know, he was on the field for 11 games, but I think there were a lot of games in there that he wasn't fully 100%. He certainly wasn't in the game plan a whole lot, and so there's a lot of unanswered questions.
I think what the texter was alluding to is not necessarily, I don't think it was a he, right, or whatever, I mean,
person.
Pronoun, person, just person,
them.
Okay, person. I think what the person was saying is he was the person was equating it to not like one incident, like one or two. The person was taking this 3 years. Mm-hmm. And they kind of summed it up in a, you know, what if, you know, Caroline just started out. Then they gave her 5. They gave her 10. They gave her 5. And then it's like, I think the texter was saying they try to sum his career up in that little snapshot. Of what they were saying about you as far as getting any time on the air. So I don't think it was just meant for like right now. I think it was taking his whole career. And because I've said this, and this is nothing new. Again, if you've been listening to our show, which I know you have, I've always said that, one, Treylon needs to be on the field more. But in being on the field more, when he's there, y'all need to target him. Y'all need to make him a part of the offense. And I don't think they ever did that consistently, that coaching staff. Why they didn't, I don't know. But I can tell you, they didn't make a conservative effort each and every game to make him a part of the offense. That kid would be floating for quarters, you know?
How much of a factor do you think that it was Will Levis as a rookie coming in and trusting DeAndre Hopkins?
That had a lot. And I'm telling you, that had a lot to do with it, especially because Treylon was on and off the field with his injury.
He didn't have that same
chemistry. Exactly. He didn't have that same chemistry. You build more chemistry when you're able to be on the field with someone for a long period of time. He wasn't on the field with Treylon much because Treylon was in and out of the lineup. And then when he was in the lineup, they didn't make it an effort to get him the ball. So much so, as I told y'all before, when Vrabel says, we don't target anyone, he must think he talking to somebody that don't know the sport. He's trying to fool y'all and try to tell y'all, which he really ain't fooling y'all.
There might be a good bit of truth.
Exactly.
To that.
Like, oh, I'm going to tell them this because they don't know. No, they know, but some of them just ain't going to say anything. I'm going to say something.
Like
when
you told
do.
Me that they didn't have a problem pass protecting last season?
Exactly.
Like, don't
Absolutely.
Pee on my leg
Come
and tell
on
me
now.
It's raining Mike.
Everybody know y'all got a problem with pass protection. And everybody knows that that you target guys that you want to target. That's just how this league works. You didn't make a conservative effort until that was said. And then the next very next game that you said you weren't going to target, you don't target him, what happened? That first half, you target him like 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. So don't tell us that. That's all I'm saying is that in that situation Treylon was in, especially with the quarterback, when you're not out there as much, then you're going to defer to the guy that's out there all the time, D-Hop. And D-Hop, he deserves everything that he gets because he put up numbers. So if he's out there, you need to get him the damn ball. He built up a rapport with D-Hop because D-Hop is always out there. He trusted D-Hop. He didn't have much trust in Treylon. Why? Because Treylon wasn't out there. He didn't build that trust. And then when he was out there, they didn't make an effort to try to get him the football. So I think that was a part of what was happening last year. He just deferred to somebody that was out there 100% of the time.
And there's one instance in particular that I'm thinking of. I believe it was the Houston game mm-hmm. where Treylon Burks was wide open and Will Levis hit DeAndre Hopkins mm-hmm. instead and it got intercepted or deflected or remember exactly what it was. But, I mean, that is an that was an instance where I feel like Will Levis just kind of panicked, where Treylon Burks could have been targeted, but it was a rookie panic. I'm getting pressured. I'm freaking out. I don't know what to do. I'm going to defer to the guy that I'm comfortable with, so on and so forth. But, yeah, you're right. Treylon Burks did not get targeted very much toward the end of the season. Chris in Lewisburg, Texan, says, I'm not saying that Burks is a bust yet, but multiple first-round busts by J-Rob has contributed to the Titans' fall from worst to first. Totally.
And does Burks unfairly maybe get thrown in there because it's like, oh boy, here's the next. We got Farley, we got Isaiah Wilson. Here's the next one. Yeah, I think I do.
But it's not really unfairly, Willie. It's not really unfairly.
Whether you want to call him the B word or not, he hasn't done what he was drafted to do.
There's a lot of fair concern about what's going on, and whether it's going to get better, and that's. Maybe a small, one of the things that we're curious about with a new coach is, will it be different with a new coach? And they have also prepared themselves to, if it doesn't get any better, that they have other ways that they're going to be effective throwing the ball, right? They're not putting everything on hold and all their eggs in his basket anymore, which is what they should have done. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
He's got to break through that.
Yeah. Another texter says, can the entire radio station please stop talking about Burks? Fans don't care about the fifth wide receiver because NWI is better. A fifth wide receiver on a bad team with the only way of helping this team is on special teams. He deserves the Caleb Farley type of discussion.
Well, he's the fourth receiver, and he was your first-round pick.
Well, so is Caleb Farley. To be fair, we don't talk about Caleb Farley at all.
But Caleb Farley, because Caleb Farley is totally different. Caleb Farley hasn't been on the field. Period, maybe a couple of snaps here and there. And then when he was back on the field. And then he has so much other stuff that has gone on. I think people are just like, okay. When he was on the field, he didn't show us much. So we're just going to put that as a side note. Just put it over to the side. If he shows us something, great. If he doesn't, I wouldn't be surprised if they cut him after camp. You know, they may not. They may look at it like, listen, we've seen what we needed to see. Mm-hmm. We're a new coach staff. We're going to move on. But Treylon Burks, we talk about Treylon Burks. Why? Because we've seen the flashes.
Yeah.
We've seen the flashes. If we didn't see the flashes, we would have said, oh, what were they doing? They need to cut him now. But because we have seen the flashes, we're like, okay, just like the organization is probably like, okay, we're going to give it one more shot. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're going to see. So that's basically what it is. They see the potential, and they're hoping that he can put it all together, you know, and be a Titan for the foreseeable future.
And the Farley pick felt doomed from the beginning.
Yeah, it did. He came in hurt,
and he didn't play a senior year at Virginia Tech. Or his final year
exactly.
At Virginia Tech.
And I think that's why people are just like Caleb Farley. Just put him over there.
He's a lost cause.
Exactly.
Put him in the Isaiah Wilson category.
It's just, he just couldn't stay healthy. He's nothing's wrong with him mentally or anything else, at least that we know. But I understand, things have happened in his life, and he's going to have to deal with that mentally, and that's going to be tough for him. But from a physical standpoint, that's where he hasn't been able to show whether he's a good player or a bad player because he's been hurt.
We'll hear from Harold Landry at the podium here in just a few moments. Titans just wrapped up practice, so we'll be able to get you some reports from practice, maybe some takeaways from some people who were able to be there. Again, unfortunately, we're not able to be out at practice, but we'll get some practice recap coming up next. Back into your phones. Plus, I keep seeing this reaction in the text line. It comes up like every couple of weeks or so, and I want to put it to bed. We'll do it coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. Tune into 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Louisville Bats at home. Pregame at 6:20 p.m., first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Caroline Willie D. Mace, come play with 102.5 The Game and do some good at the same time. You're invited to the 615 Open on June 20th at Hermitage Golf Course. Come golf with celebrities on a beautiful course, with all proceeds going to Souls for Souls, who helps local kids in need. This is going to be so much fun, and I cannot wait to see you there. So get more info at 615open.com. I don't believe practice has wrapped up quite yet. We'll get some more reports as practice finishes up, and we'll keep you updated with everything that we hear, who was there, who did what, who didn't do what, so on and so forth. But first, Willie, this betting scandal in Major League Baseball. Obviously, we can go back a couple of months ago in early spring with Shohei Ohtani and the interpreter. $17 million that was being used to bet from an account, and it was money from Shohei Ohtani's bank account. Ultimately, it was found that his interpreter will go to Japanese prison for 33 years for being caught guilty for embezzling this money from Shohei Ohtani's account. Now, fast forward to just a couple of days ago, a player that, like a guy in Major League Baseball, a guy that's not, you know, an everyday name, most recently with the San Diego Padres, got the life ban, got fully Pete-Rosed for betting on games when he was injured, betting on Pirates games while he was playing for the Pirates, but injured at the time. It doesn't sit right with me. None of this really does. Tani's situation.
Well, it's a little fishy.
The timing of it, basically announcing that Tucupita Marcano is banned for life, along with a couple of other guys that I don't think have even played in the majors. They got these guys. So it's like, we got these guys. Oh, by the way, here's the closure and the statement from Ohtani.
Announced the same day that the life ban was announced?
Basically, you know, within 24 hours of each other. I don't know if it was the exact same day, but it's close. They kind of throw the stories together. Major League Baseball, I guess, has now concluded their investigation into it, and they had it in a nice little tidy little, there is no evidence that Ohtani bet, let alone bet on baseball. Okay. But Ohtani then releases a statement. It's hard to know. I just would love to hear somebody have a conversation with Ohtani and just ask a few questions. And if he's more comfortable doing it in Japanese, then let's do it in Japanese and let's translate and let's get some answers here. Just because, A, we're all concerned for every sport. Every sport's nightmare is, who's the next guy that's going to get caught gambling? We're taking all this money from the gambling companies. It's legal, so it is a cash cow. But going with that, you really worry about the next person. And next time, it may not be Tucupita Marcano. It could be somebody with a much bigger name that gets thrown out. That's the fear, I think, of all the sports, because that's coming. It's going to happen someday. Everybody's human. There are people that get addicted to gambling. They get themselves in a hole. And if you're gambling legally, they have all of the data. They're going to catch you. The ironic part is the hardest way for you to get caught is probably doing it through the illegal bookies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if that's what people are going to end up doing, but it just stands to reason. It's so much more easy and accepted to gamble. But you set yourself up, if you're these sports, to have people asking a lot of questions or worried or, you know, you set yourself up for a possible scandal down the road. And I'm not saying it happened here with Ohtani, but I think we're all sitting there going, how in the world did a guy take $17 million from a close, close friend and nobody tipped Ohtani off throughout the whole process for years, saying, hey, Shohei, you're missing a lot of money here. You realize all of this is leaving your bank account. Nobody knew?
Like, I understand nobody? He's an incredibly wealthy man, but $17 million, even for the wealthiest of people, I understand it's a drop in the bucket. That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Well, now you got to understand, too, it was pre-big contract.
Yeah, and
it was pre this huge contract that he got.
With the Dodgers, He had a pretty big one with the Angels, but not the big,
exactly,
big one.
Exactly, the big, big
that
one.
That he's on now. So he was making a little less money at the time.
But still a little less. Yeah.
And he was getting plenty of endorsements. I mean, exactly. He's got countless. I mean, obviously, $17 million to him isn't the same as $17 million to most humans.
It should be.
But $17 million is still $17 million. If you're doing your job and you are anywhere, he's got to have somebody, just the regular bank clerk watching this, right? I think we all have a bank account with somebody that if there's a weird charge, mm-hmm. somebody calls you and says, is this your charge? And maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Especially because,
but 17
wrong,
million.
But sports betting is not legal in the state of California.
Right, correct? That's another. That's
which is
another
where
part.
Shohei has been since the
beginning.
Yeah,
that's
of
where.
His
all, that's how this all got uncovered.
So it's not going to be a deposit or a withdrawal from, you know, insert sports book here. Mm-hmm. It's going to be what, cash withdrawals.
Right. That's
wire
what ESPN
transfers?
Wire transfers of $4.5 million. That's what.
Yeah. Well,
and
that
it,
was Ohtani
on it. That
yeah,
was Ohtani.
Ohtani
money.
Was trying to. I guess he. I think they said he legally said that he was going to pay off Ipe Mazzahara's debt.
Right, but that's when they figured out that we can't go with that story because that implicates him.
That's illegal.
So then all of a sudden it was he stole from me.
But didn't they put the story out that he did it?
At 4 in the morning during the broadcast, the Padres.
And that doesn't make sense.
Question.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Because I think all of us would think it's much more logical for as close as those two were, together every day for years, mm-hmm. hired by him to come over from Japan. They knew each other in Japan for a long time. That it would make much more sense to all of us saying, okay, my buddy, mm-hmm. I've got the money. I can cover you. I'll do it for you. Get some help. But in the meantime, mm-hmm. here's X million dollars to cover. That would make much more sense than he stole everything from me. Much more sense than him saying that and then switching to, oh, no, he stole all that money from me.
Yeah.
Now, has he ever, has he ever sat down for just say like people asking him questions? Have he done that?
No.
Well, for this situation?
Yeah, for this situation.
He just released a statement,
He released a statement with his new interpreter like 2 days after this happened.
See, that's the problem too. Like they've protected him. Like if you didn't do anything, if you say you didn't have no knowledge of this happening, why can't then reporters, journalists, be able to ask you questions? If that indeed – you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I know when it first initially came out, it was no questions. We're just going to make a statement. Mm-hmm. So I knew about that, but I was wondering, was there any other time that he was able to sit down with journalists, you know, or reporters and say, well, show hand, why did – the questions that need to be asked.
And I'm not sitting here saying he's a scumbag or anything like that. I just mm-hmm. wonder how that happens.
Yeah.
But does somebody, if he's got nothing to hide, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, did anybody from your finance department ever call you and say, you know, you're missing a lot of, you've got a lot of transactions here that are going somewhere?
And
forget about where it's going or anything, but you're missing $17 million. Dollars.
But has the base, has the baseball world, for whatever reason, have they moved on from it?
Yeah.
That's completely wrong.
They have now closed
the book on it. That's completely wrong.
Well, that's what they came out with yesterday or today. Say, we have concluded our investigation. Uh-huh. Their word is there is no evidence that he bet. And I guess
I'm saying, when I'm saying the baseball world, really. I mean the reporters and journalists, have they stopped since they've heard that from, okay,
Journalists, but I think Major League Baseball's message is we're done. We're moving.
Oh, of course, I can see why their message would be that way. Absolutely.
That, two of their number one fears: one, losing a superstar to a betting ban, and two, games being fixed because a player is betting on them. And I'm not making the assumption that just because a player is sports betting, they could be sports betting on a hockey game, on a football game, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that is why the rules are as strict and as, you know, kind of funky, frankly, as they are, is because that is the fear. Is they don't mm-hmm. want players, much less Shohei freaking Ohtani, betting on games. But, you know, it's weird and it's fishy all the way around. Mm-hmm. All the way around.
Before we go to break, I just want to just clarify something. I told Caroline in the break that it would be Japanese prison to have the option. I'm reading here on multiple outlets saying that 33 years in federal American prison.
Oh. Okay.
So this is just clarification.
But
so
they also
he will
say
be
he's
going to
be deported.
Yeah.
So he's going to be deported after he serves 30-some-odd. He hasn't been sentenced yet, right?
There's, right. And that's what I'm confused about, too, because it's a Japanese prison, but also on multiple sources like CBS, ESPN, they're saying federal prison, American prison. So I don't know.
But
I just want to clarify
I don't
that.
Sense, like, in this statement from Ohtani, you don't get any, like, does he feel at least betrayed by this guy? It's
that's
almost
what I'm
like,
saying. Are you angry with this guy?
He stole from me. That's kind of too bad. Okay, we're cool. It's over.
To be so rich,
let's move
that
on.
You don't care if your friend steals $17.
Wouldn't you be bitter?
If my friend stole $5 from me, I got a problem. It's not the $5, the act that you stole it.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, coming up next, we heard from Seth Walder on our show yesterday, ESPN Analytics. He released the ESPN FPI, which was not very kind to the Titans, however way you want to look at it, whatever numbers you want to crunch. But what was the biggest contributing factors, or maybe what are the bigger contributing factors to such a low ranking, and what's our concern level about that number, about that evaluation analytic? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.